You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, January 19th, 2011. This is episode 167, Files, Files, and More Files. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wells Tech Podcast. This is Martin Spriggs, your regular host, along with Sally Draper, also your regular host from Sleepy Eye. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. How are you this morning?
I'm fine and excited to talk about technology once again, which is what this show is all about, and especially technology that relates to ministry. And we are back on our theme of church and school administration.
Yes, and this week we thought we'd shift the focus to file management in the church and school office, because all that great work all of those administrators and secretaries are doing generates a lot of files, and we need to be able to save those files in locations where we can share them with other people oftentimes.
Yep. So it's becoming more and more a collaborative work environment. I think back in the paper days, probably less so, but now that digital files are created, and that's where, you know, let's say bulletins, newsletters, letters, et cetera, everything's digital at this point and easily passed around, shared. And there are some good ways to do that, and there are some bad ways to do that. I think that one thing we've talked about here in the Synod office is to try and reduce the amount of attachments that go on, and I think that's probably still the norm in the church and school office, where somebody creates a document and says, I'm going to attach this, I'm going to send this to somebody to take a look at or to print or to whatever. And there are tools out there that are probably better at sharing files than email.
Yeah, just to take a step back as to why email wouldn't be a good solution. Once you email that attachment out, number one, you're bogging down the whole email system.
You could be. Some of these files could be large, right?
With large files, and so that can, you know, really slow things down for everyone. And in addition, you're passing out a copy of a document or whatever that is going to have revisions and have multiple versions if you aren't real careful with how you manage, you know, collaboration on those documents that you email out. So if you avoid that whole email thing and just store the document in one place and have people look and make changes to the document in one central location, things are a lot easier to manage.
Mm-hmm. There are, of course, other reasons that you'd want to consider central storage for, or network storage for office documents. One is that you can access those resources, depending on how you've got it set up, from anywhere. And we know from talking with a lot of people in church and school situations that more and more work is getting done in places other than the church and school office. So whether that be at home or wherever, there are reasons to be able to make those files available other than just inside the office.
Sure, I can think of lots of reasons and lots of conveniences that you know, that affords you, as maybe you have a sick child and you're able to work from home on a particular day, or maybe you're out and about and you have a mobile application where you can bring up just the information you need to share with someone. So lots of conveniences by having it accessible from external locations.
Yep. Another reason that you may want to consider a centralized storage solution is just for security and backup. The ability to have a, let's say, a third party, and we'll talk about some of those, do some of that what we would call infrastructure work for you. So instead of you having to figure out, or your network administrator or your part-time person or whomever, having to manage backup schemes and those kinds of things and programs and making sure they're up to date, checking, make sure they're working, doing test restores, make sure they're backing up the right data and that you're able to get it back. Most of these online services do that for you right out of the box. So if you put a file up, let's say in the cloud, they're going to guarantee its availability.
So that takes a lot of pressure off of us and potentially expense as well. Mm-hmm. So very nice to rely on those kind of services. And I guess the one drawback is you got to have the internet mm-hmm. to make all of that work. So if your internet connection is down and you're relying on a cloud-based solution, then you could be presenting yourself with some challenges. So if that's if the files you're working with, you know, are that critical to your mission, and then you probably need to store them locally, at least in addition to out in the cloud.
Mm-hmm. Right. I guess another drawback or potential drawback is if you're using a cloud-based service. We're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because there's a bunch of different ways to do this. But if that service is down or goes away, and we know that some Web 2.0 businesses do happen to go away, then you want to make sure you've got access to those files somehow.
Right. So you're going to want to invest your time and energy in a solution that has some staying power for sure, has mm-hmm. some big names behind it or something, so that you can be confident you're not going to waste your time with it.
Yep.
And lose your data.
Yep. So let's talk about the different ways. Now, we've kind of jumped into that cloud area, but before we maybe even go there, the most natural and probably the solution that is in place already in a lot of church and school offices is the local network. I would say a majority of churches and schools have some kind of network, internal network. So it doesn't mean that you need to be online per se. You just need to be on an internal LAN where you've got a file server of some sort that is maintaining files, or you at least have the ability to back up to them. And we've got a lot of good resources when it comes to setting one of those up. And that's not necessarily for the faint of heart, but I think it's getting easier. And we've got some good resources on the WellStack Wiki for that.
That's right. We'll include a link in the show notes. And actually, what this page is built from is a conversation that happened recently on the WellStack listserv. Uh-huh. So we'll put the question out to the listserv. You know, what do you use? What hardware? What software? How do you back it up? Do you have external access? Those kind of things. And we got an excellent response from a variety of people. And all of them pretty much were using different solutions.
Yep.
So there's lots of options there. I guess one thing to keep in mind is who's going to actually manage that network and what software and hardware configurations they're comfortable with.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, there is potential to repurpose some older machines for server type, you know, just file storage access. And so it may be that you have the hardware to do it already, and there are free solutions for operating systems and managing that network that are available via the web. So check out some of the links and ideas that are shared there on that WellStack Wiki if you're interested in setting up a local network.
Then another approach is what maybe we should call the synchronization approach, where you could essentially go from computer to computer for file sharing. And there are a lot of tools out there. Two of the most notable, one that's getting a lot of press lately, is Dropbox. And that simply allows you to tag a folder or set aside a folder, a Dropbox, that you can put stuff in. And you can share that folder or folders or subfolders with other people. And they have a Dropbox then on their computer. And whatever you put in your Dropbox gets synchronized to their Dropbox. So you've got two local files, or you can have more than two. You can have if you've got a team of people that need to have access to a file, you can share it that way. There's also limited cloud storage. I believe it's 2 gig. It might be 5 gig at this point. I'd have to look it up. But you can pay for more, and you can get 50 gigs of cloud storage. But regardless of how much storage, I think you can sync an unlimited amount between computers. And another one, a Windows-based solution, is a fairly new product, although it's been around for a while and with different names, and they've kind of all brought it together, and that's Windows Live Mesh 2011. And that works very similarly to Dropbox. You throw in a file, you share it. There's an online component with limited storage. I know that's 5 gigs that is available there. But you have that ability to have it in multiple locations.
And, you know, another take on this would be if you need to share files via your website, you might want to use some of these storage solutions instead of taking up room on your web server for larger files or whatever. You might want to use Windows Live Mesh or Dropbox or some of the others to share files that way too. So you just would include a link to the file where it's stored in your Dropbox or whatever.
Exactly.
Lots of flavors to that.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say another way to think of it, of the cloud-based storage, is with items like Google Docs, which allows you to just upload your files.
Yeah, and this is pure in the cloud kind of solutions. There's not, well, although they do have kind of a local syncing, their primary use is in the cloud, right?
So you're not creating your files necessarily, or if you are, you're just copying them to the cloud so that they are available there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. One of the advantages of in the cloud storage, especially with Google Docs, is real-time collaboration. So if, Sally, you and I wanted to work on a document, we could start a document in Google Docs online, and if I gave you permission, you could jump in the document at the same time that I was. And I could see what you were adding, and you could see what I was adding, and we could collaborate that way. So if you have any kind of collaboration needs, that might be a good solution.
If you can handle how weird that is
to
watch somebody else type at the same time as you.
It is.
But yeah, imagine that with a far-flung committee that you're trying to pull together for a project at church, and maybe you just get everybody on a phone conversation at the same time and you edit as you go.
Yep.
That can be a very powerful thing and, you know, cut out some issues that you're having with gathering a meeting.
Sure. And there are some other tools available for in the cloud storage. One that's really popular as well is Box.net. Most of these also have a mobile component. Google Docs, you can get through your smartphone as well as Box.net. Box.net works with versioning as well. I don't know if there's real-time collaboration, but I know you have versioning of files, so you can check in, check out, make your changes, and then check it back in so that somebody else can work on it or see it. There's different flavors of that. All of these have a free component, although Google Docs doesn't have, I don't believe, has a paid for component unless you go with the Google Apps, which is also free for churches and schools. And then not to leave out our Mac friends, and all of these work on Windows or Mac, but something specific to the Mac is iDisk through the Mobile Me platform, which is, I believe, it's $99 a year for Mac users, and that works similarly to a Google Docs kind of a solution where you have quarantine storage that you can have for private files, or you can have a public folder that you can give access to other people for. So those are kind of the big ones for in the cloud.
Lots of options there.
Yep.
Another option you might want to consider instead of putting the files out in the cloud is actually being able to access the computer on your in your church or school office externally using some special software, virtual network computing, VNC technology, to tunnel in basically and get to that computer and operate it from another computer that's external to the office.
Right. A couple of advantages and disadvantages here. The advantages are, one, you have basically at the screen access. So when you're hooking up with VNC or another product called TeamViewer, which we've talked about in the past, you're seeing it's as if you were sitting at the computer. So you have the whole file system there, you have a start menu, you have all the applications there. The negative side of that is that you are transferring all those bits and bytes across the network from one screen to another, and that takes some time. So there can be some lag, although some of these are getting really good at it. The one that we use here in the center office now is called TeamViewer. As I mentioned, there's a mobile version. It means you install a server on one end on the machine that you want to have access to. And this can be a file server if you wanted to do it that way. And then you have a little client that you install on the computer that you want to view the files from. And there's a username and password, so it's fairly secure. And it works well. You can transfer files from one computer to the other. You can work with files right on the screen, so if you've got applications running. This might be a good way to, I know many of our listeners use Shepherd Staff. This might be a good way to use Shepherd Staff remotely without having to jump through a lot of hoops.
Great idea. And finally, we want to move on to a fairly new hardware solution that's available, where you can actually have a separate piece of hardware that actually performs like an internet file server. It's right. available on the web.
Yeah, there's a few of these, but one that's been around for a couple years now, I think it came out in 08, is PogoPlug. And I don't want to steal all my thunder for my pick of the week, but PogoPlug is a network device that provides an interface to any drive that you want to attach to it. So it basically reveals the contents of any kind of USB hard drive. It has to be a USB hard drive that you plug in. I think it can take up to four drives, and that it has a web interface that you can go grab the files. You also can map the drive so that you could work on that those PogoPlug drives as if it were a network-attached device. So pretty slick. And they also have a mobile version as well, so you can see all your files that way.
So, yeah, that sounds like a really good, and we'll talk about pricing maybe a little bit later, but affordable solution for congregations to consider.
Yep, very cool tool. So more later on PogoPlug.
The suspense builds.
Oh, yes. Hardly wait. News and tech. Let's move there.
Sure. This was the week that iPhone announced that they're going with Verizon as well as AT&T. So that was a huge announcement coming out of Apple. I think it was actually last Tuesday after we had recorded our podcast for Wednesday. So we needed to add it to this week's show.
So is that good news or bad news for the Draper family?
I don't know that we're going to jump in and get an iPhone. And we do have Verizon coverage in Sleepy Eye, Minnesota.
You do, 3G coverage.
No, afraid not.
Okay, no, not any better than AT&T then.
No, we don't have any AT&T coverage. Zero.
Oh, okay.
It comes within probably about 3 miles of us. Verizon 3G actually.
So you couldn't
comes
even
within,
have a phone? You couldn't even have an AT&T phone? Yikes.
No, we have no coverage. But Verizon does cover Sleepy Eye. The 3G actually comes within about a mile of where I live. You can look on the map, and it comes barely into town, and then it stops. So, yeah, not
a solution. Someday these guys will get with the program and recognize that there are some tech-savvy people out in Sleepy Eye who need their wireless.
This is a happening place, you know. So I read an interesting article that a poll had been taken that 26% of AT&T iPhone users are planning to jump ship and go with Verizon. You know, lots of people aren't happy with AT&T dropping their calls and things. So there's going to be some abandonment of AT&T over this announcement. Mm-hmm. The iPhone's supposed to actually hit the stores on February 10th. So we'd love to hear from you if you have a new iPhone or are planning to get one based on this Verizon announcement. We'd like to, you know, hear and share your experience on the podcast. So let us know.
Very good. Well, that's big news, and that's we're going to see more iPhones out there, I guess.
Sure.
Shall we move on to our picks of the week?
You bet. Mine is. Mine's all about fun. I am experiencing Windows 7 for the first time, and it's kind of an overload because I got it on my home computer as a Christmas gift, an upgrade on my home computer. And I have a laptop that is new to me that has Windows 7 on it as well. So I'm bailing and trying to stay afloat here in the Windows 7 world and learn my way around in a new operating system. And, you know, much is the same, and there are some things that are definitely different. And one of the things that I enjoy about it is that the desktop background allows for multiple images or wallpapers, and they will change out on a periodic basis. So you're not stuck with the same desktop background. Mm-hmm. On an ongoing basis, and instead of having to go and manually change it, you can set it up to change every 30 minutes or an hour or however often you'd like to see a refresh background. And I found an excellent resource for wallpapers. And of course, this is not just a Windows 7 thing, but you could pick wallpapers for any system, I assume, from National Geographic Photography Resources.
Cool.
And they have some amazing pictures. I'm looking at my screen right now. I have my home computer has a picture of a frog who swallowed a Christmas light, and it's glowing in his belly. It's a really cool picture. And my work computer has a picture of a polar bear diving off the edge of a ice cap into the water. So he's mid-dive. It's a really cool picture as well. And there are many, many more. And, of course, with Windows 7, you have the ability to save multiple images and then point it to a folder where you have images saved. And like I said, it'll just kind of shuffle around through those images, refresh your screen every 30 minutes or hour with a new image. So I'm enjoying the National Geographic wallpapers on my Windows 7 machines. And that's my pick of the week.
Very cool. I'm looking at this now. I think I'm going to use this. That's another diversion, but it's cool. Very, very nice. These are really quality photos. So
we have to have, you know, beauty in our work environment to motivate us to do all this good work that we do with our computers.
Now, is there a way to download multiples at once? I only see one at a time.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing. I don't think there's a multiple download option. I had read about some little utility, but I haven't tried that out. It's like an external utility. So
gotcha.
Right now, I've just been actually enjoying browsing all the pictures because there's so many amazing pictures there. And then, you know, downloading here and there to build my own little library of National Geographic images.
Very cool. So you are apparently one of those special breeds of spouses that enjoy tech gifts for Christmas.
Well, yeah. Don't you?
I do. But usually wives are a little bit more discerning when it comes. We have a rule. I think I've shared this before on the podcast. If it has a cord, it's not a Christmas or anniversary gift. So. And I try and abide by that. Well, I don't know if software counts, but I think it probably does.
Yeah, I'd waited a long time for a Windows 7 upgrade. I was very excited about that. And we actually bought that family pack that has three licenses, which was an excellent deal. And my son upgraded his laptop, and then we installed an upgrade to our media PC. And we're enjoying our media PC a lot. And doing the Netflix streaming on it and a lot of other things. So yeah, we are a Windows 7 family now.
So have you seen the video called The Doghouse?
Yeah, that's a good one, isn't it, Martin?
We should
share. Is it safe to share now?
Yeah,
after Christmas
sure.
is over, maybe we could.
Exactly. Well, there's a line in there. For those of you that haven't seen it, you know, it's all the guys that have done dumb things as far as gifts for their wives or girlfriends are in the doghouse, and they're talking, you know, what faux pas, you know, did they violate? And one of them was, well, I gave my wife RAM, and I even put it on a card or attached a little note that says, thanks for the memories. Yeah, that was precious. So your little story made me think of that. So
there you go.
That's a cool video.
We'll find the link and throw it in the show notes.
Yep. All right. My pick of the week, and I've already tipped my hat a little bit, is the Pogo Plug. There are different variations or versions of the Pogo Plug. There's the basic and the pro, which for some reason are the same price, $99. And then there's the biz version, which is $299. So it depends on your needs. But as I mentioned, it's just a network device, and you plug USB hard drives in. The hard drives don't come with it. You have to provide those. But what that saves you from doing is having to do all kinds of networking, because the software that comes with it and the Pogo Plug website together gives you a web view of all of your files. And depending on which version you have, I think even the lower version, you can share different folders that you create. And if you use the biz version, you can even assign total ownership of different folders. So everybody, let's say in your church or school office, could have their own particular area on a drive, or drives, or the entire drive if you want to give a drive per person. So it works like your own little network share, except you have access to it anywhere. And so you can plug, I think, four drives into it, so you can get as much. I think you can get, more than 2 terabytes? I think 2 terabytes is still the max at this point, so you can get a lot of storage. It does, again, have that web interface, but you can also map the drives. So on Windows, Mac, or Linux, it can appear just like a regular drive on your desktop. And that's very cool, because then it works just like any other, you know, kind of service or anything that you'd access on your regular old hard drive. So I'm very impressed with it so far. and I think it will have some application within church and school office. It's very simple to set up. You simply plug it into your router, and you plug in a via USB a hard drive. You log into Pogo Plug, and it runs you through the software. It takes like all of 2 minutes. So there's really almost no maintenance, and I think anybody, whether they're technical or not, could manage this. So it's really user-friendly. So that's why I think it's maybe a nice fit for the church or school office as well.
So you're using this for personal files. Mm-hmm. Is that right, Martin?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just looking at their website, and the Pogo Plug, it says, is not available in the U.S. So it's good that the Pro is the same price, and you can just notch up a level and go with the Pro instead of even bothering.
The difference between the regular Pogo Plug and the Pro is that the Pro provides Wi-Fi, so you could actually see it on a wireless network in your home. That really doesn't make a lot of difference because you're already plugging this into your router and it just appears anyway. So, and you always have the web access. So lots of different ways to get at the data. It can do some automatic syncing with your documents, your music, your video files. And you can also, for some video files, play them right within the browser because it encodes them and makes them available. So cool stuff.
All right.
Cool stuff.
Yes, it is.
Let's move on. Community feedback, and we have a lot this week.
We do. First up, we heard from Ryan Rosenthal. He shared a couple of links. One I want to mention in particular is a math doodling website. And this is probably for maybe high school level students to get into some cool math doodles that actually demonstrate things like exponential functions and things like that. So a fun twist on math lessons, and there's probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 videos at least that are math doodle videos. So check that out. We'll have a link in the show notes.
Cool.
Next up, I wanted to mention that I read about an app maker for the iPhone where you can create iPhone apps with RSS feeds and actually submit them yourself if you have a Mac computer, or you can pay this company $30 to submit your app for you to the iTunes app store. So if you're interested in making an app for an iPhone, you might want to check this out.
I actually tried this weekend.
And how did it go?
I'm liking it. It's somewhat limited because you can really only plug in RSS feeds for the most part, but it does a nice job. So what I did was I began to create a Wells app. So I took all of the Wells content. So I took our podcasts, including ours, mm-hmm. and Daily Devotion and Through the Bible in 3 Years, which are all audio ready. I took our video feeds, which are all now hosted on Vimeo because they have an RSS feed. I took our Q&A, which is a real popular item on our site, which is RSS enabled, and then the written devotions and blogs. And now they're all, I didn't publish it yet, and I've got a lot of work to do yet, but I was able to build the app and authorize its installation on my iPad. Even though it doesn't do iPad, you can still use iPhone apps on an iPad. So I could actually try it out on my device. You can do it on up to 99 or 100 devices just to do some beta testing. And I'm pretty impressed. It kind of insulates you from that, because if you're programming for iPhone, those of you that do it know that you got to know Objective-C, which is not the easiest language in the world to try and learn. I've tried. This is... for certain things, probably a great resource for people who just want to build a quick app and don't want to get into the nitty-gritty of the code. So I'm pretty impressed.
Very good. Well, I'll be looking for a Wells app to come to my iPod Touch in the near future.
We're working on it. I may have beta test this one, in fact.
I wouldn't mind.
Okay.
All right. Good deal. Okay, next up we heard from a couple of our teacher listeners, one named Debbie Spriggs, who you might know more.
Oh, yeah.
And also Gail Potratz. And they both shared a link to Big Marker. And I'm checking out the Big Marker website right now, and it says you can experience the best online meeting platform. Big Marker is a community for real-time collaboration, a marketplace for human knowledge, a place to freely express and to broadcast yourself, all live. So basically what it is a web meeting platform. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's free to use.
I think it seems like it's geared toward teachers. Mm-hmm. It appeared on, at least I know Debbie found it on Free Technology for Teachers blog, which she reads regularly, mm-hmm. and passed it on to me, and then we put it in the show, and then at the same time, Gail did the same thing. So we haven't actually tried it, but I think there's probably reason to do so because it does the basic web conferencing, whiteboarding, does have audio conferencing via VoIP. Mm-hmm. So I think and it's free, and it seems like it's kind of geared, as I said, toward the educational space.
So thanks for that find, ladies. We appreciate always those cool technologies. Mm-hmm. And hopefully, some of our listeners can make use of it in their distance learning scenarios. Mm-hmm. And Gail also shared a link via Digo to a website called plus.maths.org. I assume this is a European website because they refer to math, plural maths, and I know mm-hmm. they do that in Europe. But basically, this is an excellent website for teachers to share with their students with a lot of different math related subject matter and video tutorials, games, a lot of interesting articles and things. Here's one. What goes up must come down. How are the forces acting on a gymnast swinging on the high bar? And they, look at things with a different perspective, but bringing out the math lessons in these everyday things. Mm-hmm. So excellent find, and I'll be adding some of the games to my Wacky Wonderful websites for the students in our elementary school to play, because I think some of them are appropriate for elementary as well.
So, good deal.
Yeah, check it out. Next up, just a brief mention of LinkedIn and the In the Wells group on LinkedIn. We haven't talked about this for quite a while, Martin, but over on the LinkedIn social network, which is primarily for business-type connections, there is a group called In the Wells. I think you may be the administrator of that group. Is that right,
Martin?
I am
one of two, yeah. And we...
Okay.
Andy... What is his last name? He's probably a listener and... I'm going to forget, and I could look it up. It starts with a T.
He's actually been on our podcast before.
He has.
We interviewed him quite a while ago about the LinkedIn network. But yeah,
but he and I share responsibilities there, yes. So he's the one that actually started it, in fact.
Mm-hmm. And it's just a way for you to have discussions and share information about with people that are in the Wells. And recently I had the idea that I haven't told the In the Wells folks about the Wells Tech podcast. So I thought I'd put a little blurb out there and point them to the podcast. And we got some real positive feedback in the process. One in particular was from Daniel Hughes, who's at St. Mark's Lutheran. I believe that's in Watertown, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And he actually authors a blog. He shared a link to his blog and has at times used the Wells Tech podcast as subject matter for his blog and shared information that we've shared on the podcast and linked to the podcast. So if there's any of the listeners out there that would like to look at what Daniel's doing as an example, we'd love to have you share the good word about Wells Tech on your blog as well. So we heard from Jason Patowski, Alan Bunt, and Robert Fisher in the Wells discussion forums too. So we thank you all for your positive feedback on the Wells Tech podcast.
Yep, and there is a lot of discussion. Andy Thimer is
yes.
who I was trying to think of. He started this group back in 07, I want to say, or 08, somewhere in there. And but there is a lot of discussion going on, and we get member requests all the time. I don't know how many. I could look it up here. How many members we have? 428 folks in there. So
it's awesome.
Yep.
Great group to be a part of. Mm-hmm. And another of our listeners, Cindy Krieger, who's out in Lansing, Michigan, and works for the state of Michigan on their web, the websites for the state of Michigan, sent us a really interesting link and one that our teachers in the listening audience may be interested in following. It's a Twitter feed that started last Friday from Mackinac Island. And the fort at Mackinac Island used to be an active fort. And back in the late 1880s, a young man, a 12-year-old young man, started a diary. His father was the surgeon at the fort, and he was living there, and he started recording his experiences on Mackinac Island. And what they've decided to do with that diary is tweet it on a daily basis via a Twitter account, which is Boy at Fort Mackinac. And we'll have a link to that in the show notes. And each day at 10 a.m., they're going to share the diary entry from Harold, the boy at Fort Mackinac, and you can read along. So basically a really great original documents kind of thing to do with a history class or something similar, and kind of experience what life was like back in the 1880s and the interesting activities that this 12-year-old boy is involved in there at Fort Mackinac. So check out the Twitter feed, and thank you, Cindy, very much for sharing that with us.
Yep, very good. The last one was from me, and I just posted a tag on Digo, and this is a blog post entitled 60 of the Best Church Website Designs, Visual Swirl Design Resources. So it's the group that did this. No Wells Church is on the list. In fact, I'm not even sure there's a Lutheran church on the list. Very Baptist heavy, so those Baptists really enjoyed their design. But some of them are very cool, and I think, and I've said this in the past, it's good to look at other church website designs, if not just for the design, but more even for what kinds of things do they have on their homepage. How do they, what kind of language do they use? What kind of organization of the information do they use? I find that enlightening, and I've gotten a lot of ideas from just looking at other church websites, determining, you know, what should go on our own church website or even on the Wells website. So good blog post there you may want to check out.
It reminds me that I am into my first ever class teaching at MLC, a one-hour class on webpage design, and that's exactly what we did the first week of class.
Was looked at websites.
Basically with a critical eye, look at other websites and talk about what we liked and what we didn't like
cool.
about them.
Cool.
So it's a great place to start if you're beginning a web endeavor.
Absolutely. Next week is the what we call the Gale Show. Actually, it's a show where we focus on educational technology or classroom technology. And Gale had an interview that she conducted with Barry Britt from Sounds Abound, which is a royalty-free music site for schools. So we're looking forward to hearing from Gale and playing that interview with Barry Britt from Sounds Abound next week. Let's close the show with the music of Branches Band, Jerusalem the Golden, a very familiar hymn to most of us from their album, Light Eternal. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We really appreciate you listening, and we hope you tune in next week.
Shout of them that drive.